The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Volume right for you to hear me? Great. So this evening I would like to tell you a secret. a secret about Buddhist practice. It's an open secret. It's, you know, you can tell anyone you come across if you'd like. They probably won't understand it. So that's why it's a secret because people don't understand so well. It has to do with the essence of, I think, Buddhist practice. The essence of what mindfulness is about. So to explain this, I'd like to use an analogy. If we put down an 8-inch plank of wood along the floor here, all the way to the end of the other hall. So, you know, so I don't know how long it is, but maybe it's 50 feet, 60 feet. And ask you to walk across down the plank to the other side of the building. I think most of you would find it relatively easy, eight inches, you know, maybe 10 inches if you want to, you know. And you could just walk calmly, relaxedly down and back. Some of you, maybe, who are a little bit more limber, would be happy to skip down. Wouldn't think twice about it, you know, just it'd be relatively easy. Now, if you took the same kind of 8-inch plank and somehow secured it solidly and had it go over a 100-foot valley, chasm, and maybe it went on for a mile, and it was solid, good, it wasn't going to even sag at all, it wasn't going to move in the wind, it was just solid there. And you're asked to just walk down that, you know, keep walking. And, you know, you look down, maybe it's 100 yards, maybe it's further, like, so, wow, it's a long way to go down. It would be probably much more challenging to walk that plank. You probably wouldn't feel like skipping. And some of us would probably get at first kind of tense. Oh, this is consequential. You don't want to look down. Oh, you better hold yourself really still and just make sure you're right in the middle. But if you're to hold yourself too stiff, you know, too cautious and too concerned, you actually become unstable. It's like almost like there's almost like the pull of gravity is going to just like it's going to pull you off, you know, to one side or the other. And if you overcompensate, you're in trouble. But maybe you finally kind of relax, you're not so tense, you kind of decide not to look down, you can look straight ahead, and just keep your eyes, you know, walking steadily. And you're going along for a while, and then you start thinking about, what are you going to have for breakfast tomorrow morning? And, oh, you know, maybe some strawberries would be good, and, strawberries should be eaten with cream. And you're, wow, that's really great. And then you find you're kind of like in breakfast, and forget where you are, and you put your foot down, and you kind of miss the edge, and there you go. So you somehow make it back up again, a little bit bruised, and you're walking some more, and then you find yourself really eager. You hear there's an ice cream parlor at the other end, that 1 mile long, you know, bridge, and you know, ice cream would be cool. And so you kind of like, maybe a chocolate store. And so, so you start leaning ahead. You're kind of ahead of yourself, thinking about what's in the future, and you're not paying so much attention anymore to where you're walking. And oops, your foot goes over the edge. You go over the edge. Or maybe you are really concerned about what happened at work today, and someone said something, someone did something. You feel resentful. You feel hurt, and you're kind of in the world of that hurt and resentment, and you know, I'm going to go talk to them tomorrow, and you kind of start simmering inside, and then you kind of really kind of think, well, I'm going to really, and you put your foot down, you miss the edge. So it doesn't really work along this plank of wood if you're going a really long distance to have your mind getting lost, not staying present, getting distracted. And you can get distracted by many things. You can get distracted by thoughts, future, past, desires. You can be distracted by strong emotions that come along. And, you know, if you get too afraid of walking that plank, it's probably counterproductive. You know, it's not so useful for you if you get caught. And you realize that. Maybe if you're smart, you realize, I'm so scared, there's actually dangers for me to walk this plank. I need to kind of breathe deeply and try to stay calm and stay present. Or if you get too over-eager to get to the other side, and you realize that doesn't work either, because then you're also not paying careful attention to the next step. You have to really be present here. And so you realize that how dangerous it is to miss your step. And so you really have to stay present and alert. You have to stay relaxed enough. And the mile-long bridge that's 8 inches wide, you know, is long enough to kind of maybe get into the groove of staying at just the right balance of being very alert, very relaxed, very balanced in your posture, very attentive, not letting your mind slip it into things which you're not only justified for thinking about, but they seem, really important to think about. You know, maybe you're thinking about the presidential election, and that's like a really important issue for all of us. And you know, it's really important to be consumed by that and alarmed by that, and you know, and you know, like the whole, you know, future of the planet depends on. And then you put your foot down. You know, even something that seems really important, you don't have the luxury to kind of think about. You have to stay right there in the present moment, in there. So in some ways, this is also analogous to mindfulness practice, where we often think we're walking along maybe a plank that's right on the ground, and it's pretty safe to walk on it. And maybe you think your plank is actually 10 foot wide, or maybe 100 miles wide or something, you know, just like you have, you're safe. It's fine for you to think and wander off in thought and get lost in the past and get caught up in your emotions and these important issues that are going on, who's right and who's wrong, whatever. And so you get kind of swept away, and then it's generally quite, you know, safe, because if you veer off, you know, a couple of feet to the right, a couple of feet to the left, you know, the ground's going to hold you. But I think from time to time, human beings discover that the ground they were walking on was actually quite narrow. And in a moment, you can make a mistake that will affect your life for the rest of your life. I mean, literally, you know, if you're walking down, crossing the street on the sidewalk, it says walk, but you're not really paying attention because you have the legal right to walk. It says walk. And so, but you're not paying attention to what you're doing. You don't notice it's the drivers who are reading their cell phones are not paying attention, and so you get just, you know, run over, you know, for the moment. They're at fault, but you weren't paying attention. So maybe legally you're not at fault, but if you had kept your eyes open, you could have maybe noticed. And so that lapse of attention crossing the street maybe is quite consequential. And or you're not paying careful attention, you're a little bit frazzled, maybe, or something, and it's possible to say something to a good friend that maybe ruins the friendship. You know, it takes maybe a few years to develop the trust and the deep value, and then you say something unkind, and the relationship gets soured pretty quickly. It's hard to repair, and so you stepped off your 8-foot walkway. It's just like that. And so there's many ways in which, you know, we're going along our life merrily. We don't realize how narrow the bridge we're walking on, how easy it is to slip off if the mind, you know, is inattentive to what's happening and not careful and not caught up in its things it's doing. But in fact, we are kind of walking all the time on a ledge. So the secret, so all that what I've said so far could be seen as, you know, a good old-fashioned, irritating admonition to stay mindful. You know, how important it is to be mindful. You know, and so that's fine. But we haven't gotten to the secret. So here's the secret. That as you're walking, say back to this thought experiment of walking across this 8-inch wide bridge, it goes for a mile, and you're just, And you're kind of getting in the groove after a while. It takes a while to somehow not get caught in the fear, and that kind of dissipates and relaxes. Not allow yourself, the mind, to wander off into the future, the past. Not allow yourself to get caught up in the emotions and the important drama of your life. But to learn to stay present in a relaxed and open and clear way, but very attentive, very here, very present. The secret is that that feels really good. There's something about that kind of presence which feels very satisfying, that feels very unitary, connected, present, alive. Somehow the mind is not fragmented by its preoccupations, when it's not fragmented by the emotional turmoils and issues of the life in the moment, and you're able to settle down in just this moment, connected to your body. Because if you walk across the bridge, you have to be in your body. You have to be really know what you're doing. But relaxed in your body, but really alive and attentive in your body. If you're walking down that 8-inch bridge and you start feeling sorry for yourself and you put your hand up on your forehead and said, oh my God, this is so terrible. How did I end up in this mess? Start leaning over and kind of closing your eyes and there you go. You know? So you can't give in to self-pity because that helps you lose your balance. Or you get angry at me because I put you on the bridge. and got you walking. And so, maybe it's reasonable to be angry at me, but you better not be angry while you walk on the bridge. Because that's going to be, add to the danger. So wait for get to the other side. And so the idea being that to stay present and balanced, there's a certain degree of independence and freedom where you're not going to get caught in many things we normally get caught in. A lot of the currents of the mind, currents of the heart that we get swept away in and pushed around with, we're not going to do. We can't afford to do it. The secret, as I said, is that that feels really good. It feels very satisfying. It feels like we're alive and connected and here in a kind of a full three-dimensional way. It's like technicolor before it was black and white. And we're really here. And so the point of mindfulness ultimately is not to live mindfully. The point of mindfulness is not to live in a mindful way so that we're safe from falling off. The ultimate point is to have an experience of being alive that's deeply satisfying, very meaningful, compellingly satisfying, compellingly inspiring to be connected to. And a lot of it has to do with this freedom that comes from a mind that doesn't get attached or caught in its experience. You might have all kinds of thoughts that might arise, all kinds of feelings that might arise, all kinds of experiences that come along. But you're able to kind of stay, have a certain degree of self-possession, self-awareness, where you don't get lost. There's all kinds of interesting things happening. So, you don't get lost in it. Imagine walking across that mile-long 8-inch bridge. And there's a beautiful kind of old-fashioned airplane with a stunt pilot who climbs up on the wings and does somersaults and waves at you. And so you're kind of like mesmerized. And then you wish you were on a plane because you're falling. So, there's all kinds of great things to be mesmerized by and be interested in. And it's fine to, oftentimes it's fine, it can be fine to do that. But even things which are fine to do, to get lost in or get caught in, be involved in, there can be a kind of a loss in that of a certain kind of higher quality of being alive that comes when we're free, that comes when we're not caught, when we're attentive in a clear and open way. And so at some point, as people practice mindfulness, practice Buddhism, the hope is that we discover that there's something very satisfying, valuable for ourselves in keeping a mind which is relaxed, present, at ease, alert, attentive to what's going on, but more importantly, a mind that doesn't easily get swept away or caught up in its thoughts, but stays kind of here in a free way, a mind that's not, you know, that's independent of what it can know. And this idea of a mind which is independent of what's known, while it knows, is one other way of characterizing a mind that's free. So whatever it might be, different people have different ways of experiencing something which is meaningful. It might just be that there's an experience of calm, which is very meaningful, or a sense of ease. For me, the hook, or the first kind of indication of something like this for me, when I practiced many years ago, was a feeling of integrity. And I have felt a greater sense of personal integrity as I was meditating than I did in any other time in my life. And then the quest for me in practice was how to bring that sense of integrity into the rest of my life. So, because I thought, you know, why should I just only have integrity when I'm meditating? You know, I wanted to kind of, so then I went off to try to practice Buddhism in order to try to bring that into the rest of my life as well. So at some point, we do this practice, and then at some point, we get some clue. We get some taste of a way of being which is valuable, which is meaningful. And that becomes a reference point. And the idea of having a reference point of something meaningful. So for me, it was initially integrity. Nowadays, the reference point is often a sense of ease. Another reference point I have is a mind that's clear and untroubled, or a mind or heart which is open and available. So one of the things I practice often is, I know what this is like, a heart which is available and open. And I still have the tendency sometimes of avoiding certain things. I'm a little bit of, maybe you don't know it because I'm always sitting up here talking to people in front of a lot of people, but I'm kind of an introvert. Maybe it's obvious. and so, you know, it's not exactly my instinct to go, you know, find people first and foremost. I kind of, you know, I'm happy to be off by myself. But I find it very, very wonderful to recognize when I'm going to move away from people, just not because I'm aversive necessarily, because it's not, but actually in turn towards them and here I am and open to them. So the sense of being an open heart, open mind that turns towards and receives and I find so much more satisfying and happiness producing than following my introverted instincts, you know, at every occasion. So the idea of having a reference point, discovering some way of being, and then when you have a reference point of something, some higher quality of being, that becomes very helpful to recognize when you lose it. So if you have some modicum of calm, some modicum of ease, some modicum of sense of feeling free, or some modicum of feeling attentive and present in a way that's satisfying, you're not going to keep it all the time. But what you can do is notice when you lose it, or notice when you're about to lose it, and then study that. Understand that better. You don't have to feel bad. You don't have to criticize yourself for losing your presence, losing your calm, your ease, or whatever that is. But you're very lucky to have a reference point of something that feels, that has some depth to it. And that reference point can help you understand better what you do to lose it. And in some ways, this is the second secret of the practice. That the path of practice is not found so much by holding on to something that feels good, but rather it's to become wise about what takes you away from it. And so we use in Buddhism whatever kind of sense of kind of bright feelings, good feelings, sense of integrity, wholeness that might come from practice. We can use it as a teacher for us to help us understand how we begin to diverge from it. So how I'm getting caught in the future, what I believe about that's so important about kind of really kind of getting lost into the minutiae of this conflict I am with someone. Is it worthwhile losing my sense of calm to kind of get swept away and, you know, in the details of the conflict or everything? You know, or is there a different way of being with conflict, a different way of being with the challenges of our life than getting lost in it or getting riled up or getting resentful or, you know, things that kind of really lose our quality of good quality? So we study that. I think it's helpful not to feel like it's wrong to go off sometimes into all the different reactions we can have. But the idea is to understand it really well. And from the earliest time in Buddhism, one of the definitions or understandings of what it means to be a wise person is not so much to be wise about you know, great spiritual states and transcendent natures of reality and ultimate things about life, but it was to be wise about what brings us suffering, to be wise about how we lose ourselves in experience. So the first secret that I was telling today is that it isn't that we're trying to be mindful for its own sake, but at some point we discover that when we're mindful, there's a way of being that's deeply satisfying. And that's a good place to live. That's a good home for ourselves. The second secret is that with that as a reference point, we use that not to criticize ourselves when we lose it, but to use it to help us see more clearly what it's like when we lose it. Get curious, get interested. Oh, that's what it's like when I get caught up in something. And as we understand better and better how we get caught, how we get lost, how we get distracted, that helps the calm or the ease or the freedom or the good quality become more better and better and more realistic. Because it's very easy to kind of feel good in some way and think that's it and get attached to it. But we don't actually, it's better not to know what it really is and have some fixed idea, but rather to kind of have something that you discover, but then keep opening up to deeper and deeper dimensions. Keep opening up to how it might unfold in new ways for you, rather than just always going to be the same thing. So, that's the secret. And I suspect that if you just go out in the street and try to tell some people that secret, it'll stay a secret. Maybe they won't understand, or maybe I didn't convey it well enough today. So if you have any comments about this or questions what I said or anything you'd like to say, or this would be a nice time.
Explain more about like how integrity feels like for you at the time, and do you ever get bored?
So how integrity feels? Well, that was a way. This is 40 years ago that I first started practicing, and that was the way the language I used for myself back then for it. It was very palpable for me. And it was a sense of being whole and settled on myself and where everything was included. I didn't have any sense that I was supposed to exclude anything from my experience. I had no idea I was supposed to stop thinking when I meditated or that I wasn't supposed to feel certain things. I had no idea I was supposed to feel anything in particular. So the way I practiced was a kind of unconditional acceptance of the moment as it was. Be present for this experience. And so there was no divisions in my heart and mind. There was nothing which was acceptable or non-acceptable. It was just, or there was nothing unacceptable. So everything was just there for it all. And so it felt of openness, willingness, relaxedness with what is, whole. Everything was whole, kind of. And it felt, my breathing felt like I breathed more easily and relaxedly. My mind felt clear and more open. That's kind of how it felt back then. That makes some sense. And boredom, I never got bored with that. And I think the least boring thing that I do is meditating. Oh. So, you know, Brian, you know, there's some people up here who are raising their hands.
Thank you so much for that talk. That was really beautiful. I love it when you use imagery. So in the way that we can figure out what's taking us out of ease, is there a way to kind of cultivate joy and ease without getting attached?
Oh, yes. I think that the less attached we are, the more joy and ease will kind of just bubble up from inside. And that's where I put my most of my value in, is not doing things that bring joy and ease, but letting go of what gets in the way and let it bubble up from the inside. Because I find, this is the third secret of practice that I've kind of discovered, is that that kind of amazed me when it started to happen, is that you don't have to have a reason to feel joyful. You don't have to feel a reason to feel at ease. It's more like just you keep letting go. And it's kind of what the heart wants to do if there's nothing that's kind of, disturbing it. So I mean, there are things you can do to help feel more ease and joy, for sure. But the essence, or what I find most amazing, is that you don't have to do anything except, in a sense, let go of the obstacles. Is that the adequate answer?
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay. So.
First of all, thank you very much. And I have a question about mindfulness versus, let's say, creativity, imagination, and innovation. And this is because when I think of some of the greatest innovators, oftentimes they end up being like some of the least mindful people, at least according to the stories. For example, I think it was Newton who boiled his watch instead of an egg, or Archimedes who ran out of the bathroom naked because he found this discovery. And also just fictional writers, when I hear interviews, a lot of times it is almost like that walking on the plank, and suddenly something reminds them of something totally different, that leads to a great work of fiction. So
great, thank you. I think it's very important not to set up mindfulness and creativity as being opposed to each other. In fact, I think that the more we're settled and relaxed and whole with the mindfulness practice, the more we tap into a whole range of intuition, creativity, inner sources of understanding and knowledge can operate, that can't operate if we're living, always preoccupied or always afraid or anxious or always looking at our smartphone screen. And it's kind of limits, the kind of deeper wellsprings of our life. And and I found that for me, that in the early years of my practice, as I kind of settled into practicing more and more, I became more and more creative. And the more I'm connected to the practice, the more creativity I have about how I live my life and how I understand. And it seems to be almost synonymous. It's almost like the mindfulness opens up channels in my mind that wouldn't be there unless I was mindful and settled. So that's part of it. But this kind of example of how some of the more dramatic discoveries that humans can make sometimes happen when we're not being mindful, not being attentive, kind of like we're offline, we're in the shower or something, or got for a walk. Or I think this is a common experience. And so, you know, this is why we have to be careful not to overvalue mindfulness. Sometimes in Western Buddhism, it's kind of like we've made mindfulness our god. Like, you know, that's the only thing you're allowed to do is to be mindful, and you have to be mindful all the time. I think, you know, mindfulness has an important place. I teach it, right? I think it's great. But, you know, we don't want to kind of overemphasize it either. And as we do it, there's also becomes a little more second nature. But I think that there's a time kind of to sit down and look at the ocean and kind of forget our thoughts and what we're concerned with. And then something else can bubble up, you know, that comes from the unconscious, subconscious, something. That's been an important part of my life. What I found, some of the biggest decisions I made in my life that were kind of life-changing for me it required me to spend a lot of intense time thinking and reflecting about my decision, what had to be done. But the answer didn't come from thinking about it. That was just setting the condition for it. And then one decision I made when I decided to become ordained as a Zen monk, Zen priest, and that kind of set my direction that, you know, that brought me here eventually, was I was sitting on the edge of a river just watching the river. And I wasn't thinking about my issues anymore at all, just looking at the river. And then in that relaxed state of just watching the river, there was suddenly a dramatic shift in my body. And then I knew what I was going to do. And later, because I'm a rational kind of guy, later I came up with the reasons. But, you know, just the shift. And then another time when I was... And it's a little bit similar. I was deciding whether to go to graduate school or go to the Buddhist monastery. And I was involved in this wrestling inside, wondering about it. And then I went and they had a service. They were chanting Buddhist chants, Buddha sutras. And so I went to chant with them. And then I was involved in the chants, kind of absorbed in the chanting. And then in the middle of that, the same thing, suddenly there was a knowing, and I just knew. So that kind of knowing can happen. So it helps to kind of put down your guard. It doesn't mean to go off and do something that distracts you. It means something, you know, you do something that's deeply relaxing and allows something else to operate.
Thank you.
Here in the front. To Jill.
So I, I've started meditating, I have like, when I meditate, like certain parts of me come up and I'm able to like really look at them and feel them and understand them more.
Uh-huh.
But since you started talking more about being in your body and I have done that, that's when I started experiencing the wholeness. Like as you were talking, I was thinking for me, it's wholeness.
Mm.
It's like all those parts of me came together.
Nice. Wonderful.
Yeah.
And what I suspect is the greater sense of wholeness of being in the body, there's more space for some of the dissociated or unknown parts to reappear, to appear and show themselves. And when the parts that we haven't been focusing on or knowing about ourselves, when they can arise in the context of a whole body awareness, there's more space for them, and there's more kindness for them.
Kindness is a big part of it. Relaxation and kindness is huge. It's like, and that was a big part when I looked at the parts of me, is learning how to be kind about it. Because they weren't always great.
Self-knowledge is seldom good news.
Yeah.
But it's possible. It's possible to receive, if there is bad news, so-called. It's possible to receive it in a field of goodwill and kindness, compassion, spaciousness, and we don't have to make it a problem or make it another reason to be critical of ourselves and define ourselves by it. Just allow it to come and hold it. And I think that's part of what I meant by integrity. It's like it can all be there. It's okay. Especially in meditation, because you're not going to act on it, so you can just let it be there and see it. And anybody else? Anybody ready to walk the plank? If you do walk the plank, if you took my thing seriously, you either have the plank on the floor or just 6 inches off the ground. Don't experiment with anything higher. Yes.
I didn't really walk the plank, but I did a ropes course.
Uh-huh.
And everything you're saying exactly happened. At the beginning, it seemed like, oh, I got this. And then the further up you went and the more elements that were interjected there got more and more difficult. And then you started suspending your belief that because you were going higher.
Uh-huh.
Now, you were cabled in, so you were protected mentally. But I thought it was fascinating how the fear and the adrenaline started pumping. And then, of course, you're there with numerous people, so you have to share a perch. And that's all part of it, right? You're trying to get there. Someone else is also trying to get there. How are you going to work it out? And hence the team building, I guess, and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or not.
Yeah.
But it was fascinating. I do want to go back because I did have this overwhelming sense of heart pumping. And mm-hmm. even though I knew in my head, you know, I'm fine. And, you know, you have these professionals there, too. Yeah. But it's interesting. You could... You don't have to walk the plank. You can just do a ropes course.
Yeah, good. And be sure you're cabled in. I did it with my 8-year-old son once, and it was quite interesting to be high up in the trees and looking down. And even you knew you were cabled in with the harness, it still feels like, you know. And then it turned out this particular one, you had to figure out how to cross this between these trees. You know, the top of the trees. You know, cross this cable, all these ropes. But you had to do it together, where you had to kind of support each other, reach out and hold your hand and support them around. But he was 8 years old. He was so small. They were, you know, so how was I supposed to reach over to him? And so that was, you know, just my son. So how to stay present and clear and not get, you know. It's one thing to do, you know, if you're alone. Another thing when you're caring for other people. But it's possible. Yes, let's have one more. We have time for one more, if you can, right here.
Okay, so now that you just said that, can you talk a little bit about how you can care about someone but keep that detachment? You talked about your son.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about a friend that I want to protect. So talk about how you can not get wrapped up in that.
Yeah, I think, you know, for that example... I clearly was responsible for him. I was up there. I brought him up there. The game was to cooperate, right? So it clearly had to be connected. It wasn't like I was aloof. Oh, I'll just be an unattached Buddhist. Leave my son up there and teach him independence. Clearly possible to be supportive, connected, involved, cooperative with people. But it's possible to watch what happens in your mind, or in your muscles, or in your heart, and to notice when it contracts and gets tight, or when there's resistance, or when we get caught up in our thoughts and anxieties, and to see that this is not helpful, and to know there's another way. And this is the secret part. No, there's another way. I'm more creative, I'm more intelligent, I'm more able to kind of take in the big picture and not get swept by simple quick decisions that I later regret. If I don't get caught up in my anxiety and my fear, if I don't kind of get tight in my body and my stomach does not knots, if I know how to breathe more deeply and kind of dissipate some of the tension that's building. And so this is where learning how we get caught is so important. And then as we learn about how we get caught and learn how to dissipate some of the caughtness, then it's a lot easier to know what to do next. But if you haven't studied how you get caught, and you think you're supposed to not be caught, then you have this conflict or this struggle. So you want to study yourself well before you come into a situation where you really need to know yourself and know how to not get caught. So before you go up on the rope course with your kid, hopefully you've done some years of practice, you know yourself inside and out before the crisis comes, and then you're ready for it and you can kind of see yourself, understand what goes on. So I guess the years of sitting and meditating because it's boring, you might not understand how much you're learning about yourself in that process. And just being with yourself, seeing what's going on. And then you come to a situation which is really a big issue, then you know yourself well enough that maybe you won't get caught. Okay? I hope that was an adequate answer. So, thank you all, and I hope that wherever you walk, that you walk safely, and I hope that your mindfulness practice brings you a tremendous amount of joy and well-being and peace and an ability to be in the world and respond to the world with the greatest wisdom that's available. Thank you all.